it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So something I thought about last night, and then the caller prompted this, that I think, and I'm not trying to start anything here. This is just my opinion, and it's something I was thinking about.
Well, when you preface it with that, yeah, I'm very curious to see where we're going here. Go ahead.
I think that there is a bigger drop-off from Judge's season from where it was last year to this year, then Soto's season from where it was last year to this year. Where remember the conversation was, well, Soto without Judge is not going to be as impactful as or as effective.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's been the other way. Now, I know Judge has been banged up.
That tells you all you need to know.
No, it's not all you need to know.
I mean, he would have 55 home runs if he didn't get hurt this year. But keep going. I'm listening.
He's played 133 games so far.
And he missed 20.
Okay, he missed 20 games. How many? What's he going to have realistically home runs?
80 at-bats, even if he has 7.
Yeah, okay. So then he'd have 50 right now.
Yeah, with 20 games to go. 55.
He has 97 ribbies. Last year, he had 58 homers and 144 RBI.
Yeah. Now, the RBIs would not be
okay, but
the
that,
way. That's so, and that's I'll tribute.
But then that ties it into, and I'm not knocking Judge's season. Obviously, it's been terrific, but there has been a drop-off without Juan Soto. It's not because of that in isolation. Mm-hmm. Judge is a great player regardless. He was great before Juan Soto. He was great with Juan Soto. He'll be great again after Juan Soto, but there is a drop-off in those numbers, specifically ribbies, when you have the guy who's walking more than anybody else on in front of you.
Yeah.
And then look at Pete's numbers where they were prior to Soto's arrival versus with Juan Soto here. I do think there is a direct correlation.
I don't think that that's unfair. The RBIs are obviously glaringly down. Part of it is he's missed some time. Part of it is, you know, Soto's not in front of him. I mean, right. I'll give you that. I'm looking at Judge's numbers, even with the missed time, and really, yeah, he hasn't been judged for a month or so.
Right.
Leads baseball, not just the American League, baseball. Leads baseball in war, leads baseball in runs, leads baseball in walks, leads baseball in batting average, on base, slugging, OPS, OPS plus, some other stats that I don't even know what the hell they are, total bases, and 30 intentional walks. So, you know, we're sitting here saying a down year. I guess that's kind of what we're saying to an extent.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying there was an assumption, even by myself, saying, well, Soto's not going to have the power numbers that he had with the Yankees in Yankee Stadium hitting in front of Judge. That has not been the case. He has not had a drop-off. Only in batting average has Soto really had a drop. Now, it's not something you just gloss over, but as far as the power numbers go, they're almost the same for Juan Soto versus what it was a year ago with the Yankees. And you look at the ribbies that Alonso had the year before. He had 88. He's got 113 now. Do the math with Judge. Yeah, Judge last year, 58 and 144, which is just otherworldly.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, a pedestrian 43 and 97. Like, it sounds crazy, but there is a precipitous drop-off.
Oh, I like that word. You know I like that word, precipitous. I also think, though, that you're kind of glossing over a couple things to an extent. Not nuts, but I got to point them out. I got to keep this thing on the rails pertaining to the numbers. All right, so Soto's got more home runs than I thought. I did not think he would flirt. He's going to wind up with 42, 43, 44. I didn't think Soto would get there in city without Judge, without right field, all right? But he's 20 points down in on-base percentage, which for him is that's what he's always measured by, that transcendent skill, which is true. He's 20 points down there. He's down in slugging, and his OPS last year was basically knocking on the door of 1,000. This year, it's closer to 900 than it is basically 950, statistically provable. So I get it. If you want to illuminate the home runs, that's fine. You're not wrong.
Well, just the impact.
If you want to incorporate everything, there's a little nuance there that I'm pointing out.
Just the impact. Obviously, anybody's going to benefit from hitting in front of Aaron Judge.
Well, then put Volpe there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that might hurt everybody else. That might hurt Judge, in fact. But just the drop-off is not there, whereas we didn't look at it the other way thinking, well, Judge's numbers would come down too without Soto in front of him. Obviously, that has been the case as far as ribbies, which also goes back to the point before that the caller made. This is why I bring it up today, that because I was really going to save it for another day. It was just something I was making a note of.
Yeah.
That Alonso, where would he be without Alonso? Yeah, but you can't just minimize the impact that Soto's had in front of him. Juan Soto's having a terrific year, certainly an all-time Met season. And no, it hasn't been consistent, but it isn't. He's having a great year, filling up the stat sheet all over the place, helping Alonso. Now, Alonso's been great on his own. Obviously, the 37 doubles, leading the league, all that stuff. The ribbies, you mentioned the 113, but let's not pretend that it doesn't have, at least in part, something to do with Juan Soto.
It might. I'm just doing a little bit of a deeper dive here on the RBIs. Yeah, I mean, I can't really prove this. I mean, he's played at least, in the case of Schwarber, Pete, who's got a ton of ribbies, obviously second behind Schwarber with a .113. Cal Raleigh's played 141 games. He's basically played less than 10 games than even Suarez, who's got a few more than him. Riley Green, really good player for the Tigers. So I'm looking at this and I'm saying, well, I can't prove it, but it's just my thought based on what Judge always does with or without Soto. If he has those extra 10 games, but he doesn't, I get that. But if he does, he's probably at about, let me see, 106. And then with a decent finish, he's around 120-something. Yeah, I mean, listen, the numbers are the numbers. And the one thing, you know, it's funny, too, because we didn't do this when we were young. I know I didn't, because we didn't have the access to these advanced numbers or even just a deeper dive. Like, when you talked about Hernandez or Carter or Straw, and I focused on Mattingly and Winfield and all those guys, like, some of those players had amazing seasons, but they started horrendously or they finished horrendously. But it was always judged on the totality of their numbers. We've gotten into a much deeper dive and a much more nuanced conversation. Like, Juan Soto's numbers are insane. But if Juan Soto does not wake up the rest of the way, and even if he does, it's still undeniable that he stumbled the first 2 months here. There's more fixation on that rather than what you do after 162, which I find interesting. Well, I almost don't know if it's fair.
Right now, whatever Soto has done, right now, prior to the, and he's been on an absolute heater as well, but I'm just saying right now it doesn't matter. It's about the next 2 weeks here, the final 18 games, and then really it doesn't even matter if you get to the postseason. It's all about October. Nobody will care, just like last year. People forgot quickly about Pete Alonso's 88 ribbies or whatever it was once he hit that home run in Milwaukee and hit another one against Philadelphia. So the regular season numbers can be analyzed, and they are, to your point, because people have the access. I'm not into the numbers. You know that.
Yep.
We could have conversations about it. With Soto this year in particular, I've been focused on the numbers. Outside of that, I really don't care. But it doesn't matter once we get to October. That's what it's going to be all about. The BT and Sal Show on The Fan is presented by your Tri-State Cadillac dealers. Cadillac, the official luxury vehicle of those New York Mets. Same thing with Judge. It doesn't matter what the numbers are. Once you get to the postseason, he's got to actually go nuts in the postseason.
That's a big one for him, boys.
Yeah, it's going to be a big one.
He's got to do something this October.
Yankees will be trying to win that division as well out there tonight, taking on the Tigers. Then they got the Red Sox following. So it's going to be a fun, you know, final 2 weeks of the regular season here. Mike is calling from Bayonne. What's up, Mike?
Hey, guys. How you guys doing this morning?
Hey, Mike.
How are you?
I'm good. Hey, listen, there's been at least 10 handful of games, dozen games, that Mendoza's cost this team with some of the decisions that he's made late in games with bringing certain relievers in the game. And it almost feels like sometimes he's actually punting the game when he brings in guys like Static. As far as last night, you know, losing a game 1-0, it's frustrating. We all get it. But, you know, if the Phillies end up taking 3 or 4, possibly sweeping this series, the Mets could find themselves at the end of the week out of a wild card spot, and that's tough because with the remaining schedule coming up, you know, the way this team is playing, God knows what could happen. And, you know, going forward, this organization needs to decide who the permanent third baseman is going to be going forward. And, you know, guys like Acuna, who's the best second baseman on this roster, and there's been a couple times in the last couple weeks where McNeil, the guy is a slug around the bag, and he's not turning tailor-made double plays because his hands are just too slow and is becoming extremely frustrating, and sometimes it's costing his games, you know. So going forward, something has to be done with this roster and to shake up the core. You know, Nimmo.
Remember, though, Mike, this is only year 10. I'm not trying to back David Stearns here because the jury is out for me as well. I mean, he's got the bullseye on him this year in particular, and thank you for the call. But this is only year 2. It's one of the reasons why I got on him a little bit at the deadline, BT, is I wanted them to clean up that kind of mess that they have, whether it was trading Vientos, whether it was trading Beatty, trading McNeil, figure that out, and they didn't do that. And then some fans are thankful because Vientos has all of a sudden been on a tear. McNeil, you could play him in center field. They're valuing the bat. You could put him at second base. He's been fine. He's not Acuna, but Acuna can't hit.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the Mets need to figure that out. Beatty's looked great at times defensively at third base.
Yeah, he made a nice play last time where he came in on 1 foot, kind of threw it across
couple
the diamond.
Couple games in a row, he's made some really stellar plays over at third base. So I still think, point is, I still think Stearns is in the process of evaluating what he has here. But there are certainly issues that David Stearns has had even in year two with the Mets.
Agreed. And you also have to understand, though, like when you judge a general manager, you've got to look at what he inherits here. So you inherit Nimmo's, and I'm not trying to dog Nimmo, but you inherit Nimmo's contract. You inherit Marte's contract. You inherit McNeil's contract. You inherit the, obviously, Senga. Lindor. Senga, 5 years, $75 million. So there's certain things that you've got to navigate. It's not nearly as easy as we make it out to be. Quick question for you. Any interest in strength of schedule? Does that matter to you? To kind of give a little...
Who do you got? The three Mets, yeah, the three Mets, teams. Giants,
Reds? I've got the... I didn't even look at the Reds. I've got the Padres because yeah. I wouldn't shut them out here. So the Mets have the ninth toughest schedule, 18 left, all right? The Padres have the 29th toughest. So that Padres schedule is easy.
Okay, but they play the Mets three times.
You know, I know, for sure. And that could change everything.
Now, Padres right now have a three-game lead on the Mets for the second spot.
They do. They play the Brewers, they play the Mets, they play the Reds, and they finish up they've got the Rockies for four, the White Sox for three, the Diamondbacks for three. So that's 29th easiest there. San Francisco, we ran through some of their teams before, but they're 23rd. 23rd easiest.
And the Mets is the ninth.
Mets is not Mets is top 10.
Yeah,
difficulty.
Good. They're gonna have to earn it. I'd rather that. I don't want to know back.
I wouldn't. I'm looking forward to the Yankees playing the White Sox at the end of the season.
Well, maybe that's different. Whatever. I don't want the Mets to back in. I want them to start playing postseason baseball sooner than later because then it'd be on a roll once they get there. There's 18 games to go. Like, it's no more, all right, even if it's 30 games to go, like, now's the time to start waking up. Hey, last night, the reason why I was so critical is not because I thought the division was realistic, although, sure, you win last night, gives you hope, it extended, right? The reason why I was frustrated with last night is that's how a playoff game will play out a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
A one-run game doesn't have to be 1-0, but a one-run game. Drama, you're on the road against their best closer. You got a chance. Pete Alonso leads off with a base hit. Here we go. Gives me goosebumps thinking about it. This is how much I love playoff baseball. All right, leadoff man is on first. What are you going to do? Pinch run. Right idea, wrong guy to pinch run because Mendy shot the Acuna bullet
because
earlier.
He messed up.
That's a problem. Now, again.
Well, that's what I said to start the show.
No, well, so did I. I mean, that's the one issue that I got on. I was talking about that. I'm not saying he's been a problem overall. Last night in isolation, yes, one game, that was an issue. And by the way, it's not the sole reason why they lost, but he could have helped them have that bullet with Acuna there. But the feel of that game last night, the drama of it, you're going up against one of the best the National League has to offer, if not the best. One run game on the road. Hard-fought battle, whatever. Their pitcher shut you down. You still have a chance in the ninth inning. Tough to lose those games. It happens. It's going to happen to the teams that win the World Series. So that's why, to me, last night was like a playoff game. They have to treat every game from here on out like a playoff game. Not going to win them all.
I think they're trying to. Yeah. I don't think that there's, the Mets are coming in. Yeah, whatever. We got some time left. We're good. We're pretty much in the playoffs, even though it's still got to make sure you get there. Mm-hmm. I don't think that the Mets' play is attributable to a lack of focus or a lack of, engagement. I just think that they've been maddeningly inconsistent all year, which at this point of the season, that's kind of who you are.
Correct.
It's up to you to dispel that. It's not up to me to say, I think they're going to do this because I just think it. I'm going to react to the first 145 games that you show me.
Correct. They have.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not
outside of Cleveland.
You know,
the Browns, outside of
Browns. You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Been maddeningly inconsistent. We all know that. They know that. So has everybody else in the sport. Now, why is that the case? I don't know, BT. I can't. You look at individual players. Cody Bellinger, for example, great. Started out his career great. Goes into a little bit of a funk. Working his way up. Like, he's just one player. Pick a player, any player.
Corbin Carroll had a down year last year.
Okay, bingo. So there you go. Like, even these great, this guy burst onto the scene, and then he struggles. Like, for the most.
The Orioles as a team this year. No, I think it's a lot of parity.
It's all over the. Okay,
maybe. I think baseball's become harder.
Maybe that's the point. Maybe the data analytics has. I have no idea. All I do know is that there's inconsistency everywhere across the sport. Ray is calling from Waterbury, Connecticut. What's up, Ray?
Hi, guys. Great show as usual. You got to score when you facing an elite closer like Duran. Mm-hmm. It's hard to string together three hits. Mauricio had a bad read. I mean, the ball was way over Castellanos' head,
Castellanos.
And it kind of bounced around in the corner. if he had a bad read, where's the third base coach saying, waving him over instead of watching Mauricio play it halfway? You've got to score on that.
Ray, hold on a second. Ray, okay, fair. That's your read. I disagree. But those are two very separate things. The read that Mauricio got and the third base coach imploring him to run once, and I actually don't think that Mauricio got a bad jump, although I'm in the minority. I know Tadzio said to the contrary. We'll get into it, obviously, coming up. But to me, once, if you perceive it to be a bad jump or just being smart to make sure it's not caught, once you commit to that, I'm talking about from Mauricio's perspective, there's no way in hell you can send him home. SNY showed the replay three times. Bryce Harper had the baseball, and Mauricio's on third base. You can't wave him there. Would have been out by 15 feet.
Agreed. Can't send him home. Now, why didn't you think? We could do it now. I did think he had a bad read.
A lot of people did, yeah. So, and I initially did too.
Right.
Right. And see, to me, if the ball's in the air and it was more of a liner,
right,
it's easier to judge the depth perception. So if you look at, I thought SNY's camera work was phenomenal. They really did a good job with this. If you look at Mauricio, what his first inclination was, you know, he kind of took three or four steps, not running, not like just kind of, all right, I'm off the base here. And then I don't think that he knew if the ball was going to be caught because it was not in the air. It was more of a liner. And if you look at it now, it hit the base of the wall. So that validates what I'm saying. It didn't hit the top, didn't hit the middle. It literally hit the base, like the dirt and the base of the wall. So Castellanos, from Mauricio's vantage point, there's a part of him that's saying, geez, that ball might get caught. Now, there's also a part of him that doesn't seem to be a very instinctual baseball player.
Correct.
And he's slow as dirt. Like, he don't run. So what I tweeted this. I'm like, hey. And you know, whatever. I geeked out and I looked at the sprint speed and I looked at Pete's. Obviously, Pete's, I think Pete's 9%, which is horrendous. And Mauricio's 13%, which is also horrendous. But I would almost value Pete's ability because Pete's a smart base runner.
He would have read it better. 100%.
He would have read it better, and you may have had a chance to send him. Now, I don't want to get nailed to the plate in that situation. I get the closer. That's a good point about the back-to-back-to-back hits. That's asking for a lot against a great pitcher. But I am going to exonerate Mauricio because that was a tougher ball to read because it was a liner, not a pop-up.
I'm not going to exonerate him. What I will say is he should not have been pinch running in that spot.
That I agree with.
That's on Mendy for not having Acuña there. Acuña's, he's on the roster for one reason. One reason only. Well, two reasons, I should say. Defensive replacement and speed. That's it. So that's what you need to save that bullet for. Meaning, you have a lead going into the ninth inning. Obviously, you don't need him for speed. Now you want him in for defense to protect that lead. If you are trailing, he's got to be glued to the bench until you can fire that bullet and get him on base in that exact spot. He would have had a better read, and he's lightning fast, and I would have sent him. It's worth the risk against a great closer. I'm consistent with this. Against the Guardians earlier in the season, I was saying the same thing about Sarbaugh. Ninth inning, Mets coming back here.
I remember.
Tough closer. Lindor ripped a double down the line. Like, you got to score. This is the big leagues, dude. The Mets have had issues with scoring guys from second base on a single and scoring a guy from first base on a double. Like, that can't happen in a one-run game against a great closer on the road.
Yeah.
You've got to be able to score him. So Mauricio wasn't the right runner. Even with that, though, I did think. Now, I didn't watch it 100 times.
Oh, but I
was
geeking out. Rewinding,
I did see it a
frame
couple
by
times.
Frame.
I thought he had a awkward, like, tentative, trepid initial getting off the base. It wasn't aggressive. It was more like, I better not get caught here.
Which, by the way, is not the wrong mindset in that spot in the game.
I want aggression there.
But what if he's overly aggressive? And what if Castellanos makes a good play? Then we're ripping him for being too aggressive.
No, I mean, he should be able to still get back at that point, even if you're halfway. The other part about your theory is saying that he can't read it because it wasn't in the air. Bingo. It's a line drive, bro. Read it right. If it were hit in the air, I could see the hesitation and waiting.
I think it's the opposite.
See, on a line drive, you should expect that, especially
why?
Looking at it. Well, that it's gonna drop.
No, that's the exact opposite of what I'm saying. Because think about this. Okay, just take a wide receiver and a quarterback, and not even in a game. You just throw the football on a practice field, right? If I throw a line drive to you, let's say you just run it a little 20-yard go route, right? And I don't put air under it. Is it more probable that you'll catch that or one where I throw with a lot of air and I overshoot you? We know the answer. It's the former. It's the one that is lower and closer to you. And that line drive was lower and closer to Castellanos than a pop-up or a deep towering shot that would have banged off the wall. Now, listen, I even do this with the kids that I coach. I am a massive proponent in putting stress on the defense. Like, people don't associate. They think think, you know, baseball, but stress, which means you got to get the ball, you got to hit the cut.
Make them make multiple plays.
Yes, you got the cut, the first baseman.
Field it cleanly.
Bang, give me a good throw to the dish, give me a good tag. Boom, but there's four or five things that have to happen. So generally, I am always a proponent of that. But Mauricio, based on the read, and we differ on whether or not it was a bad read or a good read. I'm not saying it was good. I'm just saying it wasn't bad. But there was no way at that point you could have sent him based on what he did the first 2 seconds of that play. He's at third base. The ball's at first base.
That I agree with. The Monday Night Football game last night, an odd one. Now, I was watching the Mets, as I know you were a BT, so I checked in third quarter or fourth quarter, but I was reading some of the stuff and watching the highlights. And this is why social media, it really is the devil. Like, I get it. We have to be on there for news and things like that.
Yep.
Just part of the job. I envy my wife or people like that who have nothing to do with social media, couldn't care less.
She doesn't have Facebook?
She does not have Facebook.
Wow.
No Instagram.
That's why you get away with saying what you say.
She doesn't see those clips. She'll search TikTok or whatever a little bit to just watch it, but like not on social media. Okay. And the point is, doesn't need to be. Like, I have a lot of friends grow up with friends.
It's most of mine too.
Social media, the way that people are. Yeah. Anyway, you would think that if you just went based off of the first half in social media, J.J. McCarthy didn't belong anywhere near an NFL football field, and Ben Johnson was the next coming of Bill Belichick or whatever. Yeah. Pick a guy.
Yeah.
And then you watch the third quarter and fourth quarter, and it was the complete opposite. Vikings woke up. I thought the Bears were going to win that game going into the game. I just had a gut feel. Luckily, I did not play it last night. I stayed away. But then you watch, and J.J. McCarthy all of a sudden turns it on. Maybe reminiscent a little bit. Remember Sam Darnold? Of course you do. Sam Darnold's first Monday night game.
Against Detroit.
Yeah.
He threw a pick six, his first play.
Bingo.
I was pumped. Little Colt was like 9 months old. Yeah. Sitting there. I'm like, hey, we got our quarterback. Look at how he bounces back. We got our quarterback.
For some reason, I think. But then he bounced back after that a little bit.
Yeah.
Dude, I had like 500 on that.
Did you really? Five bills?
I was all in on the Jets that day. Yeah.
Do you remember the spread?
I don't recall. But the Jets came back and won that game.
They came back and won the game. I think Chris Ivory time. And I remember Darnold played very well, made some big throws in Ford Field.
15 or 16, whatever.
Anyway, it was 15 for sure.
That was a little bit reminiscent last night. And then the Bears, all of a sudden, they can't move the football. Caleb Williams looks lost. They can't get a first down. And Ben Johnson, in his debut at home on Monday night, loses a division game. Not a good look for the Bears to start their season.
You know what's crazy? Think about how when we were growing up, I mean, the Bears have never had a good offense. I mean, they're one of those teams, you know, kind of like the Jets, that never have a great quarterback. I mean, they've gone through so many. It's ridiculous. Grossman, you name it. Yeah. Justin Fields. I mean, they've tried a million ways sideways. But for a team that is so embedded in the history and the deep culture of the NFL, it really feels like to me that I almost never watch the Bears on prime time.
Yeah.
I think about that.
They've always been an ugly team.
Yeah, they really are.
Stream your local NFL game all season long, kicking off with the juicy Week 2 matchup between the Buffalo Bills and the New York Jets, starting at just $30 for your first year. It's like $250 a month. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Yeah, I'm not a big Bears believer on prime time. There's something about them, the way that they play the game. It is based mostly on history, and we still reference the 85 Bears with regularity 40 years ago.
I know.
And we're still talking about the 85 Bears.
But it was one of the best. I mean, if you saw that defense, my goodness, it was.
I think I was watching, was it last night that they were, where the hell was I looking at something that they showed a pro? Oh, no, the Cowboys special on Netflix.
Told you it was amazing.
Before the Cowboys played a game, a postseason game in Chicago.
Yeah.
Showed Chris Farley out on the field Saturday Night Live character there, the Chicago Bears, you know, that thing. That was great. All right, BT and Sal on the field. Let's get back to the phones. 888-808-1019. Adam is calling from North Haven, Connecticut. What's up, Adam?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. Mm-hmm. And I largely agree a little bit of points with both of you guys regarding the Mets. I can't believe I'm saying this, Sal, because sometimes I don't agree with you, but I actually agree with you completely here, and I had a couple points. I mean, I think inconsistent is certainly the main theme for the year, and maybe that's partially due because of homegrown talent, young players. But I think just in general, like with the way that offenses are nowadays, I think it's just inconsistent. Pitching stuff is way better. Hitting is just inconsistent with the approaches. To speak to your earlier point, like why that is, I think that's just how baseball is nowadays.
Well, why isn't the Mets' bullpen numbers better in some spots? If it's harder to hit, I understand the hitting is tougher. I do agree with that. But then why the other issues with the Mets?
Yeah. I think just in general, it's inconsistent. I think, and I don't necessarily blame Stearns for Rodgers and Helsley. Like, you can't you can't say that those were not good pickups at the time, and sometimes the change of scenery obviously affects it.
Well, Rodgers has been great. I mean, people overlooking Tyler Rodgers has been great.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree, but I just wanted to say, too, you know, some of it is unexplainable, and some of it's just baseball, but I think they are in a good spot. I think with inconsistency, there's been ups and downs. I mean, in the month of August, they scored like 9 runs a game in the month of August.
Sorry, Adam. Thought you had a bad line there. We do appreciate the call, though. And what I would say is the reason why I would still be positive here, and I want to read you this quote from Alonzo that I just saw Anthony DeComo tweet out. The reason I would still be positive here, BT, that we're going to judge both the Mets and Yankees when the season is done for each team, whenever that may be. Yankees could go out there, win the World Series, get to a World Series and lose again like they did, whatever it may be. Mets can miss the playoffs. We'll judge it and then go from there and criticize why it went wrong and what needs to be fixed when that happens. But people were burying.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know why it's not
outside of Cleveland.
You know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Both these teams, really, in July. And to me, that was insane with the way that the sport is. And to keep them separate, Yankees are, you know, right there within the division. We'll see what happens. Soft schedule the rest of the way. You know, tough schedule maybe the next week or so. But and with the Mets, same thing. Like, I'm not going to bury them until they deserve to be buried. We're criticizing them on a curve. Sure, highest payroll. It should be. I told you flat out, it shouldn't be acceptable to be the third wild card. Like, that's not even really making the playoffs. However, if that's what it takes to get in and they could go on a run,
yep.
Like that's still all possible, realistic. It may not be likely. You may not think it's going to happen. I may not think it's going to happen. It still could happen. And until it can't, like the division is getting closer to being a can't, then you focus on the wild card. Just find a way in. Then if you don't get the wild card, now you judge from there. Until it can't, I'm still going to believe in this team.
You should. Listen, I get it. To me, there's a very, very clear delineation between the final judgments, which, as you say, we will lay it all out for both of these teams whenever it's final, versus the real-time reactions. And let's face it, both of these teams have put us in a spin cycle this year.
I know.
I mean, it's been a wacky, wacky baseball season.
But you almost have to expect that at this point. Now, I think it's
not
different.
Not this wacky, I don't want. Not with all these really good players and these payrolls. I'm not saying you got to win 105 and you just got to bludgeon people, but the up and down, like the peaks and the valleys has been, it's been crazy for these teams.
Right, but there's always the, okay, but they're still going to be in the playoffs, most likely. Now, the Yankees are going to be in. Now, if the Mets don't make it again, that's a different thing. But we're reacting and have been reacting for months. Fans have been going nuts talking about the Mets like this is 2017 again versus where they're at now. Most of the complaining about the Mets and missing the playoffs has been while the Mets have been in control of a playoff spot. That's not normal. So I think that the fan base is overly negative, and this is me saying this, is overly negative at times. Even now, it's like, oh, like, why can't it just be you're frustrated with the loss last night because it was a bad loss with a lot of mistakes that happened, sloppy play, no offense, tough spot in Philly. Why can't you be upset about that without saying, well, they're going to miss the postseason, like Hoff was saying before, while they have a three-game lead with 18 to go? That's not something to sneeze at.
No, the math is still in your favor. Why you could say that, and people like Hoff and others, I don't know if anybody quite feels that passionately as Hoff did. If you missed it, free Odyssey app.
Well, Frank the Tank.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
Loogie's buddy,
yeah.
Frank the Tank.
Yeah,
they have a little fun tweeting with each other. Although, it might be, does Loogie tweet him back? Or is it just Frank coming in, parachuting in? Either way, if you're worried about the Mets or you're putting out this sense that they're going to come up short, it's not rooted in nothing. It is premature because they are a playoff team as of this moment. But as we know, Sal, they didn't play well in June. They played okay in July. They played awful in August. And September is not off to a good start. That is a fairly long track record to... You know, if you're conditioned to think that the Mets are going to have a rough finish here, it's not like you're pulling this out of thin air. They have stumbled for months.
Yeah, but again, still in a playoff spot, still have a bunch of great players. Pete Alonso, this is from Anthony DeComo. I saw him just post this on social media, MLB.com. Quote, "I feel great," Alonso said. "If the season were to end today, we've got a chance to roll the dice in the playoffs As years in the past have shown, wherever you start out doesn't really mean much. Continues, have we played our best baseball? No. I know our ceiling is sky high, but you could look at it two ways. You can look at it as, okay, we haven't played our best baseball up to this point, or you could look at it as the talent in this room is undeniable. I think Pete sums it up almost perfectly right there.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's fair. I mean, but there's also a third option. The talent could be overrated, and it might not be the best roster. Now, Pete's not going to say that, but we can say that, if you believe that. Like,
well, where is that the case, though?
Well, just based on the record. I mean, the inconsistencies.
You're debating the talent.
Well, I mean, the talent, yeah, maybe I could be bit more. Yeah. Listen, the Mets have talent. I'm not saying they don't have talent. But there is such a thing as maybe it not being the right ingredients. I don't even know if that's true, by the way.
I agree with. It could prove true.
It could be. I mean, listen, we don't really associate chemistry with baseball. You know, you think offensive line, you think basketball, passing the ball where you want it, blah, blah, blah. But chemistry matters. I mean, think about the 86 Mets. They had it. Think about all those Yankee championships. They had it. I'm not trying to start trouble saying the Mets don't have chemistry, but sometimes the pieces are good, although I don't think their pieces are great, but they're good. Sometimes the pieces are good and they fit great. Sometimes the pieces are good and the edges are a little rough and they don't fit perfect. We'll find out soon.
That's exactly right. Last year they had great chemistry. Not enough talent to get over the hump. This year they have the talent. The chemistry certainly has not been the way that it was a year ago. But TBD. We're gonna find. So they're still in the playoffs right now. As of now, like Pete said, if the season ended today, Mets going to get a chance to roll the dice and we'll see how far they could go.
But let's face it, you're a little more nervous than not.
I'm not.
Deep down.
I'm actually excited because I like the. I'd rather be in this spot. Last year was like house money. They came out of nowhere. Nobody thought the team was any good to begin with. I certainly didn't think they were any good. Then they started playing like the best team in baseball since June on. Oddly enough, the opposite this year. And I was like, well, how far can they really go? They go on the magic run. They should have lost to Milwaukee. They didn't. Mm-hmm. They wipe away the Phillies, and then they go compete against the Dodgers where you saw the disparity from where the two teams were at. This year, it's different. I'd rather have Soto in my back pocket and Soto on my club going into the postseason and feel good about that. Now, is that going to be enough? Probably not, but it's not just him. It's McClain. Everything I believe in, BT, that you need to succeed in the postseason, I believe the Mets have. McClain, Diaz, and not just Diaz, a bullpen that I trust with Raley, with Rogers. They have some guys.
Mm-hmm.
And Soto, Lindor, Alonso. I'll take my chances with that. Doesn't mean they're going to win. They might lose. They might get swept in a wild card. Who knows? I'm just saying, me personally, I'll take my chances with those pieces.
Now time for Bold Face Lie, Bold Face Truth with Brendan Tierney and Sal Licata.
Bald face truth, bald face lie. What do you got, Hoffy?
All right, let's start with BT. BT.
Yes.
Bald face lie, bald face truth.
Mm-hmm.
The Jets and Giants will both win a game before October 1st.
I mean, just so that we don't lose our minds.
Saying both teams.
Both teams.
I thought it was one. I changed the answer. Jeez. Oh, God. Good God. Honestly, before October. I'm still going to say bald-faced truth. I mean, obviously, it's an easier leap of faith here for the Jets. They just did a lot more things well. You know, it seems like already Dable is seriously flirting with going to Jackson Dart, and eventually he will, and I think the Giants' defense is still going to be good. I say bald-faced truth. They'll scratch out a win before October.
October's the date?
Mm. Yeah. There is a cake. I mean, if Miami's as bad as we think.
Miami stinks.
The Jets should have a win.
Not only do they stink, they're going to be dysfunctional, too. That is a mess down there.
He's going to be canned.
What did Rex call him?
Nerd boy. Calling him nerd. Rex is a bully.
He really is.
Rex is a bully.
I don't think Rex is good on TV at all. Yeah, I used to think he was good. I think he stinks now.
It depends on what you think is good. Do you want clicks or reaction? I mean, he's a disrespectful bully that clearly wants a job.
Yeah, for sure.
To be the head coach. So what do you think is the first thing that's going to happen? He's nerd boy. The players don't respect him. And then they're going to fire McDaniel. Rush will be, I can coach that Dolphins team.
You nailed it.
Take him to the Super Bowl.
That's like, a script there. Yeah, he's done it before.
We've seen it a million times over. WFAN NFL football is powered by Verizon. Get to your local Verizon store today. I am going to say that is a bald face lie.
Oh, you stink.
Dude, the Giants are not getting a win before October. Who are the Giants beating?
Go ahead.
Dallas, home against the Chiefs, home against the Chargers. Dallas to me, and that's on the road.
Yeah.
Against a team that could score points. Like, that's not the issue for the Cowboys.
Yeah, but the Giants' defense is not the issue either.
Understood.
If the Giants can't score against Dallas, yo, they might not have a win all season.
Forget it.
You're backed over.
Maybe the question is, will the Giants score a touchdown by October? And I'm still not so sure.
Yeah, I would defensive answer that one, Sal.
I think the Jets will get a win, whether it is against, I hard time believing they're going to beat the Bills, but whatever, anything's possible. Over the next 3 weeks, I'd be surprised if the Jets didn't figure out a way to win one game. By the way, we'll break this down as the week goes on. The formula to beat a great offensive team like Josh Allen and the Bills or the Ravens is to run the football at him, control the clock, keep his ass on the bench.
It's always been that way.
So they could do that. So I think the Jets will win at least one of the next three games. I would say the Giants' first win will probably come in New Orleans.
Oh, very nice. So, no.
Bullface live right, for Sal.
Yeah. Sal, bullface live, bullface truth. Justin Fields will throw for over 3,700 yards this season.
Where are you getting that number from?
Well, he threw for 218. If he does that every game, he's going to throw for 3,706 yards.
No.
3,706. That's a big number.
Dude, that's a bold face line. Maybe 20. Gosh. I don't know what the actual number would. 2,500? Is that fair?
That better be 2,500. No, I mean, that's pretty pedestrian.
Trying to come across. Like, if you throw 200 yards a game, it's going to put you at like 3,400.
Yeah. Well, think about it.
3,400 if you threw 200.
Sal, if it was a 10-game season, you go for 200 a game, that's 2,000.
Right.
It's a 17-game season. Like, right. 2,000, you're the worst ever.
Yeah, 3,700 is really not that bad.
I'm going to say bold-faced lie. He's not going to get that number.
Doubt my boy, are we?
No, I like Fields.
I know you do.
I don't think you can throw him.
I'm just trying to look up one stat. All right, so the number's 37. All right, I'm going to actually say bold-faced lie.
Yeah.
Number one, they're going to run the ball a lot. Yeah, number two, you know, just based on the injury factor in the NFL, I think anytime you look at a big number like that, it's violent sport, probably smart to go the other way just because you could get hurt. So my answer is bold-faced lie. He will not. But I did want to look this up from last year. All right, I want to see how many quarterbacks in the NFL actually hit for 3,700 yards. I've got the number. 3,706. How many do you think last year threw for 3,706 or more?
I'm 10. So bad with it. Did Rodgers
You
do
say
it?
10?
Yeah.
Okay, Sal?
I'll go more than
Rodgers did, by the way.
I'll go 15.
The number is 15 on the button.
Wow. Almost half. I just went kind of half.
Well, think about this. Burrow was knocking on the door to 5,000. So was Jared Goff. Baker was 45. Then you had Geno, low 4.3s, and a few others. Sam, Lamar. And then, you know, even guys, C.J. Stroud didn't have a great season, 3,700 yards. Yeah. Even Caleb Williams, who stunk, was at 35.
That's what
it's not
about.
A big number in 2025.
But remember, too, the Jets hope it's not over 3,700 because that would mean that they'd be having success running the football and he doesn't have to throw as much. Like, Caleb Williams was not a terrific passer last year, but maybe because the Bears were trailing a lot, he's throwing. Again, I'm not watching every one of their games, but
yeah.
A lot of the yardage sometimes with quarterbacks can come from being down.
Empty calories.
Yeah, exactly right.
Well, okay, true, and that's actually a really good point, but I think, and we saw it already in week one, the way they're going to run the ball, the Jets are going to have a lot of gash plays, those 30, 40, maybe even 50-yard pops, maybe to a tight end. So I don't think it's unrealistic to think that the Jets will remain married to the run, but week to week, Fields is in the neighborhood of 215, you know, 210, 220. So it's going to be tight, but I'm still going to say no just based on the injury rate.
A joke one here. Russell Wilson will throw for over 2,000 yards. Bold-faced lie, bold-faced truth.
All right, is this me or is this Sal first?
It's BT.
Over 2,000. He's going to get benched, man. I'm going to say bullface a lie.
Yeah.
He's going to be on the bench. He can't play. He's done. He stinks. Cooked.
I want to actually, we'll do this maybe when we come back. I know we got to reset. But I do want to ask you, at what point is your, I was talking with Dennis in Yonkers last night. He's a big Giants fan, both San Francisco and Big Blue. And he asked
me. Did he join the lunch with Francesa a couple of weeks back?
No, he did not. He asked me, what was my breaking point for going to Jackson Dart? We should have that conversation.
Let's do it.
I don't want to give away my answer, but I'm going to say that's a bald-faced lie. I don't think Russell Wilson, unfortunately for him, is going to, or for the Giants, going to get the opportunity to do the 2,000.
Really quickly, just because I said I was going to do it every week, I want to test you guys still.
Yeah.
Bald-faced truth, bald-faced lie. Mets and Yankees will both make the playoffs.
Bald-faced truth, although trepidation with the Mets. Better wake up soon.
Yeah, it's a truth. I don't think I've changed on this, have I?
I just wanted you to have it.
He's like,
what kind of question is that?
Wait, you told me last week I should ask if they're going to win the division, and we know the answer for the Mets, so I didn't even want to bother.
I'm tired of getting asked that question. Oh. As a matter of fact, every day
have
I
you
get
officially
asked that question.
Said no to Evan yet? Yes. I know you tweeted it. Did you say no to Evan in the microphone?
The day after I tweeted it, I'm pretty sure I said it on his show.
Okay.
I think that's what happened. The day after I tweeted,
you don't remember?
You know, because I was off that week. It was convoluted. Yeah, I know. I think they call me. Oh, who the hell knows? Every day I walk out of here, Evan's in my face with the phone.
He is like a little nudge.
Huh? Channel East over.
I know.
No, I called.
Wearing the same ratty T-shirt, holding the same Apple phone with the microphone.
For the record, I called it off. And yes, you're right. I tweeted it that Sunday to the Braves when I truly felt.
Oh, I saw it.
You and I had this conversation many times, and I was like, I truly don't. Feel
I know
like it's over at that point when they lost to Atlanta before they played the Phillies.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like it was over, and then they go out there and sweep them, of course.
But ultimately,
we're watching the Vientos replay right now. Right. I want to see this with Mauricio.
Okay, Cass. So look, the ball's at first base now.
No, you can't.
There's no way you could have sent them there.
You can't send them, but I want to get the read. We can watch it and then break it down when we come back. Hoff, you're done with the bald face truth, bald face lie?
I mean, I can keep them going.
No, you're done. We take a break. We'll come back, reset, down with the King topic of the day, and get back to your calls as well. Mets fine? Should they be concerned about the postseason? The loss last night? All right, everything that's on your mind here, NFL as well, 888-808-1019, BT and Sal on the Fan.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.